Welcome to the You on the Camino de Santiago podcast, Season 4. This podcast is for and about people getting ready for their first ever pilgrimage on the Camino de Santiago in Spain, France, and Portugal. With your host, Camino guide, and longtime pilgrim, Nancy Reynolds of the Camino Experience. Hola y buenos días. Nancy here, coming to you from the Camino Francés, from the beautiful city of Burgos, to be exact. As this episode is going live, I will have just finished a six-day walk from Nájera to Burgos, and I will be enjoying two nights in the heart of a city that is known not just for being on the Camino, but also as a destination in its own right. In case you don't know, Burgos has one of the most magnificent cathedrals in Spain. I think of it more as a museum than a cathedral, really, because it's filled with so much art, paintings, sculptures, stained glass, carved wooden choir stalls, plus numerous chapels, a grand staircase, and a massive dome. If you visit the cathedral while in Burgos, be sure to get the free audio guide for the cathedral. It's available by downloading an app to your phone. To get the app, search in your app store for Visit Burgos Catedral. That information, by the way, is in the show notes. Also, heads up, as a pilgrim, you get a discount on your admission ticket if you present your pilgrim credencial. Burgos is also known for the Museo de Evolución Humana, or the Museum of Human Evolution. I'm going to share some text from the museum's website to give you an idea of what it's all about. Here's what it says. The main purpose was to provide Burgos with a modern museum, which could hold not only the findings at Atapuerca sites, but also the scientific disciplines involved and the scientific interpretations and theories drawn from them. Also, this museum tries to offer a holistic vision of human presence on the Earth and give, in the new theories about human evolution, the rightful place for these exceptional sites located in these mountains of Burgos. Now, what does all that mean? What it means is if you are interested in the study of human evolution, this museum's for you. Also, let me mention this. The Atapuerca sites, those are archaeological digs located approximately 25 kilometers from Burgos, where the earliest human remains in Europe have been found. The dig site is located about 1 kilometer from the town of Atapuerca, which is directly on the Francés route. If you'd like to visit the dig site, you can find out more information on their website, atapuerca.org. That's in the show notes too, by the way. Now, none of this has anything to do with my guest for this episode, except that he will be walking the Francés route. In just a few moments, you will meet Roger from Oregon in the U.S., and he will share his big pilgrimage itinerary with you. Roger's story is a sweet and tender one. After a devastating and unexpected loss, his family conspired to convince him to walk the Camino. Let's find out why. Roger, hi. Thank you so much for being with me on the podcast today.
Good morning, Nancy. Thanks for inviting me. I really appreciate it. I was looking forward to this nice discussion.
Yeah, thank you. And me too. And I remember when you reached out, I think it was last August, when you let me know you were interested in being a guest. And I was just so taken by the different components of the trip that you're planning and how you're weaving in a couple additional pilgrimage destinations as well as time with your family. So I'm really eager to hear and have you share all about your plans.
Well, it is evolved, as I'm sure everyone's does.
Why don't we start where I always like to start and put the pin in the map? And so would you share with us where you're planning to start and finish and how long you'll be out there?
I'm starting in St. John.
Okay.
And walking to Sarria, where I'll meet my son, and we will walk into Santiago. From there, we'll bus out to the coast And then from there, we'll somehow migrate down into Lisbon.
Mm.
And we will meet his husband and my daughter for a tour of Lisbon and Porto. From Porto, they will move on to Madrid.
Okay.
I will either, at that point, I have to make a decision, but I think my desire is to go to Fatima.
Okay.
The place that my wife and I would have gone to this year. Unfortunately, she passed away last year. So, and then from there, the last place we went to together with our church group was Lourdes. And so I'm going to return to Lourdes and then walk to Pamplona.
Oh, wow.
Start in St. John. After 60 some days, I will make my way to Pamplona.
Wow.
Everybody else takes 3 days, but I'm going to manage it in 60.
Well, you're taking the long way.
Yeah.
That's quite an itinerary. And it almost feels like a big circle. And for me, that's a completion. That's a start and finish that goes in one big circle back to a starting point.
Yeah. It winds up that way. It wasn't intentional. What happened was my son asked me to walk.
Okay.
My family asked me to walk, sat down and asked me to watch a movie with him. It was the way I was struggling. So I thought, sure, I'll do it. I've known about the walk since the 70s when I took art history classes.
Oh, okay. Okay. So it was on your radar.
Yeah. So I went, sure, we'll do that. And then as work light, and we scheduled it all out, and I booked my Orson ticket and my flights, and then his work life came in play. And so we made it in Soria. As a result of that, I have 35 days to get to Soria.
Okay. I love how you say you got your ticket for Orson. It almost feels like a golden ticket when you grab a bed there.
That's the way I describe it. It's a golden ticket. The golden ticket. I'm not giving it up.
I love that. It's a really special stop for your first night on the trail.
I think so. I think.
Very good. Gosh, you've said so much already. I just want to dig into this a little bit, if you don't mind.
Sure.
And first of all, say how very sorry I am to hear of the loss of your wife. I know you had shared that with me before. It sounded like it was a really rough time.
Yeah, it was. Not to get into too many details, but she was struck with a brain tumor out of nowhere.
Oh.
And the diagnosis wasn't good and the prognosis was terrible.
Mm.
10 months short of, one day short of 10 months later, she passed away.
Wow.
So at the end, because of all the transferring I had done with her and support, even though we were trained on how to do it, and it still took a toll.
Sure.
Moving somebody around is not easy. At the end, I discovered I couldn't walk to the end of the block. So I called a physical therapist that was referred to me. He said, you have to go to your primary care physician before I'll see you. So primary care, physical therapist, massage, what else? All the support team, podiatrist.
You got the head-to-toe service to get you back moving.
I just felt it was the way to do it, get back in shape.
Now, when you wrote to me and you said that after she passed, you couldn't walk to the end of the block, I took that also as emotionally and metaphorically, that it sounded like you were both physically and emotionally leveled. And I can just see, do you mind if I ask how long you were married?
44 years.
It's a long, yeah, it's a big loss, Roger. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it's been tough sledding.
Yeah. And it's coming up on a year, I think. So
yes, yes.
That's a unit of time that we can sort of look back on and see how significant your journey has been to go from that moment to where you are now getting ready to walk. How many kilometers is your whole trip?
St. Jean de Santiago is 790, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I am confused about that.
Give or take.
Then Lourdes to Pamplona is 186.
Okay, so you're coming in around 1,000 kilometers when all is said and done.
Yes.
You are going to the coast as well, I think, did you say?
Yeah, but that'll be a bus. We don't.
Okay, gotcha.
That part of it, they were in charge of the scheduling of that, and they didn't schedule enough time.
Okay.
And that's fine. I mean, you know, work-life balance. I mean, everybody should walk the whole distance except those people who have jobs.
Yeah, you know, these work commitments really get in the way of our spiritual and personal lives.
I don't know how I did it. I don't have time for that stuff.
Isn't that great? Once you stop working or stop having a job that requires you to show up 9 to 5 or whatever set hours, it's hard to imagine how you fit that in before.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said something a few minutes ago that your family wanted you to walk the Camino.
Yes. Yeah, they'd gotten together and decided that I needed a distraction. I needed something else to focus on.
Okay.
And of course, the connection to the Lord's and was strong. So they somehow or the other developed that. So he sat me down and we'd watch a movie together. And I'm like, okay, we should do that every decade. That'd be a good thing.
Wait, you should watch a movie together every day?
Yeah, every decade.
Every decade. I love that.
And it turned out to be the way.
Okay.
And I had seen that 2 or 3 times before when it first came out. So I'm like, yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, we can do that. And that's what I, you know, my vision of it was, it's a long ways. I don't know how far it is. I've seen the Pyrenees. They're a little scary.
They're a little intimidating, aren't they?
Yeah, yes. They are. I didn't know if you walked over them, through them, or what. But I agreed to do it, and then we started planning, and then his work-life schedule came into play. And so it works out well. I get to walk alone. I think that's a good. We walk at different paces, so that's a bit of a challenge for us. So I'm like, okay, we'll do the way. And then we're debating, and at that point, very early, my mother comes to visit me. My 93-year-old mother comes to visit for a week or 2 or 3, and she recommends this book collection to me, and it is based upon, this is where I figured out it was a team effort. It's based upon a gentleman in Seattle whose wife dies and he walks to Key West.
From Seattle?
Yes.
That's really far.
3,500 miles.
Okay. You're getting off easy, aren't you?
Yeah. Really easy. So it's like, that's when it became clear that this was been a team effort and they teaming up on me. Yeah, I guess the story, the book is a trilogy of five books, whatever that's called. I think they're all fiction, but the fact that there was a gentleman whose wife died and he walked to Key West is really true. So off we go.
Do you have any sense of what their hopes are for you or what they are thinking this will do for you?
I think it was the distraction piece.
Okay.
We knew that I would get into the details.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. I did. I finally stopped on the details. Enough is enough.
Okay.
I still wanted the magic. So I booked some places like Orison, but most of it, and we booked from Sarria into Santiago because it will be August.
Good call.
But beyond that, I sent you my spreadsheet of that is whatever it is.
Okay.
I'm enough of a planner that, okay, I got a plan. Plan. What do you do with a plan? You deviate from it.
That's right. That's so right.
And all those are just soft, completely soft. I was just trying to figure out, you know, 20 kilometers a day, where's this take? And yeah, and I laid it all out and then I miscounted the days. So I still have an extra day.
All right. Very good. So you plan like I do.
Yeah. It's like, I'm just going to wing this and see what happens.
Oh, it's great. Now, you said you used the word magic. When you think of the magic on the Camino, what does that mean? What are you imagining is out there?
Just not knowing what's around the bend.
Hmm.
You know, just knowing, just coming up on things and going, oh, that's 1,000 years old and it's really cool.
Okay.
Or 2,000 years old. And that's cool. And I think I'll spend some time here and slow down and take a look at it, whatever it is. Just the sense of discovery.
Discovery. That's my word, discovery. And surprises.
Yeah. 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 And so, you know, because you can get into the details you can get lost in this thing. It was a great distraction for me. You start at your doorstep.
Yeah.
It's clearly, yes, it really does. It really did help me. I think they mission accomplished for them. Even if I, for some reason, don't walk. And at this point, I've told so many people, it'd be super embarrassing not to go.
That's part of the, I think that's one way that we can ensure we're going to do it. It's the idea of throwing your hat over the wall, and then you have to go over the wall to get the hat.
That's right.
You have included enough people who are expecting you to turn up.
And I actually did that on purpose. I also booked non-refundable airfare.
Okay. So this is this know thyself? Is that what this is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Just make sure that we do it.
All right. Well, I'd love to hear more about the Lourdes and Fatima component and the significance of those two destinations for you.
Sure. We are Catholic. My wife was a cradle Catholic. I converted in after attending church for 30 some years with her. I converted. I went through RCI in 2012.
Now, cradle Catholic, does that mean she was born into a Catholic family?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. But I guess, yeah. Yeah, not everyone knows that phrase.
Yeah. Now I like it, though. It's good to know.
So we had done pilgrimage, you know, the guided tour thing. We've done Rome, Greece, and then we did France in 2019 and with our church group. And we started in Lourdes. Yeah, Lourdes. Or actually Toulouse, but then Lourdes. And spent most of our time in Lourdes. Very special time. Very cool time. We arrived the weekend that the armies from all over the world were there. That was special. The healing power of Lourdes. Apparently, after World War I, they would bring representatives of armies. I think there were 123 representative armies from the world there. They convene every year, apparently.
Hmm.
They put on a show and entertained themselves. And yeah, so the Canadians were there with bagpipes and they were rehearsing apparently at like 2 a.m.
Oh, nice. Yeah. No, thank you.
Actually filled with troops. And so you're very safe.
You would, wouldn't you? Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. So very, very fun. I mean, it made Lourdes really special, but
okay.
And Lourdes by itself. So yeah, they bring these troops in apparently every year. I had no idea.
Hmm. And you just happened to be there when they were there.
Just happened to be there. So I get stepped in the elevator and there's an U.S. Air Force general.
Oh, all right.
It's like, yeah, you get to rub hands
with the brass, the top brass.
I have a friend that has second generation Irish. So he hung out with his Irish buddies.
See, those are some of the surprises. Not only will you come across stationary objects that you didn't know were there or didn't expect, but travel puts you into the culture and into the routine and rhythm of their calendar. So you just never know what you're going to encounter. Some random marching band walking through town or some parade or festival. Yeah.
Lourdes is not a big city, and so you literally get the parade was just continuous because there's so many of the bands.
Okay.
I will say the bagpipes were pretty great.
Are you a fan of bagpipes?
No, but they're super cool. I mean, okay. I wouldn't want to live there, but.
Yeah. Well, yeah. If you look at a bagpipe, I can't imagine the learning curve to learn to play one of those.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't either. So, but they're fun. They're a fun thing to participate in.
Sure. And how about Fatima?
Fatima, another religious site. And that was our next trip, was Portugal and Fatima. And unfortunately, that didn't happen. So I'm going to finish that for her. So, yeah. I'll be honest, I don't know much about Fatima. I just know it's a Catholic religious site. We've had several friends go there. Patty always wanted to go there. And I'm right there. It's just that far on the map. It can't be that far.
It's like 2 inches away from Porto. It can't be that far, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. It sounds like that will be a very significant stop for you.
Yeah. That will be a big deal for me. Even though I don't know much about it, I guess I have time to do some research, but I'm kind of done researching.
Yeah. Well, you know, you could knock this off your to-do list by just looking on Wikipedia. Tell me about Fatima, one page and you're done. Just so you have the context for it. And then you can go without being overly informed.
And then figure out how to get to Lourdes, which sounds a bit like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
I think it might be. That's an interesting puzzle to figure out how to get from Porto to Lourdes, crossing through Spain or over Spain into France. Yeah.
And I prefer not to take a plane. I'd prefer to see the countryside.
Yeah. Well, that's the beauty of travel in Europe is they do public transportation so well. So getting a train, you might have to go through Madrid or you might have to go back to Santiago or something, but.
Yeah. Or Pamplona.
Yeah.
And then just retrace my steps from there, I guess.
Sure.
I'll figure it out. That's part of the fun of this whole thing is figuring it out.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite hobbies as well.
Yeah. So it's figuring out, getting lost and having a great time.
So you mentioned getting lost. You said this earlier before we started recording. You don't sound too worried about getting lost. What's the role of getting lost for you in this journey?
I'll tell you about our Rome experience. So it's Sunday morning in Rome. We were there by ourselves for 3 or 4 days before the tour group arrived. And so we're out there and Patty wants to attend mass at a certain church in Rome. There's so many churches, but this one had significance to her for some reason. And so we get out of the hotel and I go, let's turn right. And off we go. Except the hotel was on the other side of the street that I thought it was. So we get to this big, after a while, it's getting time to get a church. I'm like, uh-oh, I'm panicking now. I mean, I'm literally like, oh my. So I ask this young lady, I show her the map and, you know, the little, and say, where are we? And she goes, folds the map out.
Uh-oh, you are off the map.
I'm that far away. So we wind up going into the nearest church, which is this large square, and there's two churches exactly alike in this square. We go into the right one, and it turns out it's an Italian mass. Everybody, including the priest, is staring at us. But it was a great adventure. It was one of the best days in Italy. It was just getting lost and discovering things we didn't know and didn't. And it took us a while to figure out where we were. It was, so I'm looking forward to getting lost in that way. It misdirected, you know, I don't want to have to shoot a flare to find myself. But
what you're describing sounds to me like what's the word I'm looking for? It sounds like you are redefining the idea of being lost.
Yeah.
And taking away the thought that that's a bad thing.
Yeah, I think everybody... The walk is going to be different for everyone. Yeah. Everybody, I think you said in earlier podcasts, you know, if you're off a day, it's a different deal. You know, different group of people.
That's right.
Different weather conditions. And part of that is just like walking in and discovering as you go, you know, whatever it is. And so I've stopped doing my research. I'm just going to find out what happens over the next hill.
Right. Yeah, that's great.
We are booking, though, the first couple of days, Lourdes.
Your golden ticket.
And a couple of spots, I'm beginning to question how far that is. And we booked in Sarria to Santiago.
Okay.
It is August.
I think that's wise. August is when everyone in Europe goes on vacation. And so it's very busy. The school kids are out. Yeah. There are groups, big groups, church groups, children's groups. Yep. Yeah, it can get very busy. Sarria to Santiago in August. So good call on that.
Thank you.
Yeah good.
So it's just I just want to see what's out there. Just go. Yeah. I have plenty of time. I have 35 days to get to Sarria.
Yeah.
Most people do the whole trip in 35 days. So,
you know what? That's okay. Sometimes more is more.
Well, it is. And, you know, I'm looking forward to the cathedrals and countryside and the villages. So
Definitely. You know, and the thing about being lost, I always like to throw this in, is when you're on foot, you're not going to get too far off because you're not moving too fast. And one of the guidelines that I use is if you haven't seen a trail marker for 15, 20 minutes, it's just time to ask if you're on the right track because they are that frequent and you're not moving fast. So you're not going to get too far away from the trail or too far away from the arrows or the scallop shells. So that's my rule. 20 minutes, it's time to ask. And the other thing is I just love that the local people keep an eye out for the pilgrims because it really isn't in their interest, their best interest, for pilgrims to get off the track. And it's not in our best interest. So they see us and they send us back. They get us back on track. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Well, and lost pilgrims, that means rescue. And who wants to devote resources to that when there are other things that those resources could be better used for?
Yeah. My children track me. My children, they're in their late 30s.
The adult children.
They track me now, or they have the ability to track me. My daughter discovered that I don't do anything really interesting.
So. Well, there's dad again at the park, at the supermarket. They have an early alert system set on you.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I'm not worried about getting lost. Like,
yeah.
You know, no, but just off track. And that's, I hope to.
You're right. That's the adventure.
Yeah. You talk about something nobody else saw.
It's a great attitude, Roger. What a great attitude to take with you. All right. So let's look at, we've got a good sense of your itinerary. Let's look at your planning process. You said you've backed off some. Have you come into any challenges or frustrations in getting ready for the Camino?
Well, too much information.
Too much information. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You go into Facebook or even podcast and type the word Camino and be prepared to be overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. So you have to sort through that. Yeah. Or I did, in order to whittle it down. There's just too much. And like if you type you do a search on packing list and it's like, there's all sorts of help. There's all sorts of help.
And yeah, that's true.
Very fortunate in order to have that. But yeah, it was a challenge just to get it whittled down to be a manageable pile that you could understand. Hmm. Biggest challenges along the way for me, well, as I plan, because has been, you know, at 72 years old, you don't walk, I think I mentioned earlier, you don't walk out of your annual wellness exam by your physician and just walk away like you do 30. You come up with this laundry list of things that need to be done. And some of them,
yeah.
You lose, as I've trained, you lose momentum.
Yeah, you get right into the groove on training, the physical training part of it, and then boom, there's a setback. Something has to go on hold.
You keep losing momentum.
Yeah. Losing momentum.
And I'm at that point right now. I've just, another thing has happened to me, and so I've lost momentum. Now I got to get back on track again.
Yeah.
I was walking, because I have a friend that has walked 3 Caminos. Mm-hmm. And she's also a leader at the American Pilgrim Group here in Portland. And she arrived injured, like several people do apparently, arrive injured from overtraining.
Yes.
My goal was 100 hiking miles a month.
Okay.
You know, just to get going. And I'm way off that now.
It's a good goal. And I do think it's important to have a goal that's measurable.
Yeah.
So that you can know if you achieved it.
Yeah. And also, it just keeps you, I think like any goal, it keeps you on track.
Yeah. Keeps you moving. It keeps the momentum, like you said.
I've had people that are telling me I should do 50 miles a week. I'm like, yeah, that's how you arrive injured.
For some people, that is the case. Yes, that is the case. And this is something that I'm working through right now. I leave in 3 weeks from the day that we're recording this, and I have to get ready to lead a group going over the Pyrenees. So I feel a little bit of pressure is not the right word, but responsibility and accountability to be in the right condition to do that, right? So that they're not going, anybody seen Nancy? We saw her at the croissant shop, but I haven't seen her since, you know. But yeah, but setbacks, it's like two steps forward and three steps back is what it feels like. And I think what I'm learning from this process is to hit the reset button every day. If yesterday didn't go the way I thought it would, what am I going to do today? And then what am I going to do today? And then the next day, what am I going to do today? That keeps me going in the right direction. But I do think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to get trained sufficiently.
Yeah, that's, and now I'm down to that point. So I leave mid-June. So it's becoming very like...
clock's ticking.
Get this thing going.
Yeah. So from what you're learning, is there one thing that you have decided is a no pass? This has to be attended to in the training. Is there any one thing that you've narrowed that down to that you will be doing no matter what before you go?
Yeah. The in Portland, we have a lot of hills, but they're all short. Okay. So you don't get that long pull. So my intention over spring break was to go to Bend. I have a friend that has a house, and go to Bend and walk every day in the hills. And due to cataract surgery, as I literally, just before I walk into the room, they tell me no heavy lifting, and which I'm moving, really.
Come on, people.
And no hill climbing.
Seriously.
Yeah, I'm like, because the pressure on the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, okay.
Okay, so what do you do? What's plan B on that one?
I mean, I figure out how I'm going to get to some hills. I mean, some long hills. We have short hills here, but, you know, walk a half a mile, and that's not going to work on the first 2 days out.
You're going to have to go a little bit further. You know what, Roger? And this is something that I think of often as I'm getting ready, is what are the key components of hill walking? So one is cardiovascular health.
Right.
And the other is, in this case, is time on your feet.
Yes.
So those are two things that actually I'm focusing on right now in my countdown, is making sure that I can go up hills, even if they're short, without wanting to call an ambulance to come rescue me. And so to know that I can sustain a pace going uphill. And knowing that I can stop and turn around and check out the view and use that as my excuse for catching my breath.
Yeah.
Breathtaking view. I can't breathe, but it's a breathtaking view. And then time on my feet. So even if I can't go up hills, I'm trying to get in a couple hours a day of walking and standing so that my feet are used to carrying me, because I sit a lot. I don't know about you, but I sit all the time.
Yeah, because I'll be doing the walking here locally. Then I feel like I really need to get to the long hills to build that strength for that long pull.
Yeah, you'll get there.
So yeah, I'll get there. It's just a little more challenging without spring break.
Yeah, you know, the other thing about that too, Roger, that I find is the mental challenge. Is I can stay in the game for 15 minutes up a short hill. But the walk over the Pyrenees to Orsant is 2 to 4 hours. And then from Orsant over the hill to Roncesvalles is anywhere from 4 to 8 hours, depending on your pace. So for me, there's the mental component as well.
I think that's right, especially the long pull. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to stay, keep your head in the game.
Just like the other 790 kilometers, my thought is in 30 some days of walking. And I think you've said it before, is like, yeah, you can walk 20 kilometers a day.
Yeah.
You can do it for 30 days.
Can you? Yeah, that's a different question.
It's one step at a time thing. You just keep going, get and keep going.
Yes. The other thing that when we train, I think we lose sight of this, that when we're training, oftentimes we're out training by ourselves, we're alone. But when we're on the Camino, we're surrounded by other pilgrims. And not necessarily a tight group where they're in your business, but there's always people to talk to. And I find that motivating. If I'm having trouble getting over a hill, if I just start walking with someone, that helps me get over the hill, that motivates me through those harder times.
Yeah.
And I think we don't always have that when we're training.
Yeah. And I want to be able well enough, be in decent enough shape to be able to have conversation with them and not just be gasping for air.
Yeah.
And also the ability to, you know, stop and enjoy it and not just be like, yeah, I'm going to stop and look at the view and I'm so exhausted, I'm not really looking at the view.
Yeah.
And beyond that, I'll manage everything.
But yeah. Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And I think there's still time. I like to use the phrase, the house isn't on fire yet. So there's still time. You still have 2 months before you leave. I have 3 weeks, but here's my secret weapon. When I get to Spain, I have a whole 10 days before my group meets up where I'm going to be walking another section of the trail. That's my secret weapon right there.
Yeah, that will really help. Good planning.
That's what's saving me.
You're banking on that. Huh?
I'm banking on that for sure. You know, people say it all the time that they train on the trail, and I have done that. I don't recommend it. I do recommend a baseline level of cardiovascular strength and muscle strength in your legs and your boots 100% broken in and comfortable and ready to go. But, you know, we are busy, right? We have busy lives.
Yeah. Life keeps getting in the way, right?
It does. It does. I'm grateful for that fact, but it does. Yeah. So I would like to ask you to imagine yourself somewhere. And I've been kind of trying to think about where I would ask you to imagine yourself. Often I ask people to imagine themselves in Saint-Jean-Pied-du-Port. What are you thinking and feeling? Or when you get to Santiago and you've completed this, what are you thinking and feeling? But I'm wondering for you in this huge itinerary, what would be a significant point for me to use for that question?
Probably a few. And I've thought about that because you asked, especially this arrival in Santiago question you ask every time. And ever since episode 2 or 3, when you had the first pilgrim on, I'm like, what's my answer?
Yeah.
For Santiago, I think it'll be multi-level. It'll be the answer on, like every pilgrim, I made it.
Mm-hmm.
I've arrived. And that is success.
Yeah.
The other part is, she's not there.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I don't know. I don't know how that's going to go.
Yeah.
I don't know if that'd be the best day or something else.
Yeah. So, it's nice that you'll be with your son when you're in Santiago.
Yeah. That's huge.
Yeah. Is Patty the type of person who would have done this with you?
We talked about it and it was on the list, if you will. But I don't know that it would have ever have surfaced. I mean, she was a walker. She walked 3 miles a day aggressively. I mean, I couldn't walk too fast.
All right. Speedy one.
And to digress, we were at the University of Washington being cared for physical therapy. And the physical therapist was explaining to her how to stand up on the hospital bed.
Wow.
And so into her new walker. And he's going, well, you do this and you do this, or you just stand up on your right leg like you did. So her legs were so strong because of the walking. She could just stand up. So I don't know if we'd ever gone. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, an entertaining thought for us, but yeah, I just don't know. I just don't know that answer. I don't know that would have really come up. Even though one of her very best friends, it turns out, her sister, their husbands are going to Sarria in May. I don't know how their journey happened.
There's a backstory we need to know.
There's a backstory and I don't know what it.
So who knows? Yeah.
Well, that may have triggered Patty to think about doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt that she'll be walking with you every step.
Yeah. So it'll be good. But yeah, that one and just the very start, I think, will be the two main things.
That getting started right at the beginning when you have the entire thing ahead of you and that mountain up ahead.
Yeah. And also the anticipation, it's like, if some people say, you know, you want to plan the thing, you want to plan the thing. And then the other people say, well, I heard about the walk 2 weeks ago. And so my flight's tomorrow morning. And I'm like, I do believe I've had too much time.
Okay. Okay.
But I have to leave when I have to leave. I don't have the option of, when should I go? If I'm going to go, I have to go not during the school year.
Okay. Why is that?
My granddaughter was born deaf and she has cochlear implants. There is a school here in Portland. And there's, I understand, about six of them in the country. And one of them happens to be in Portland that addresses that exact condition. And so I have driven her to school for this is the eighth year.
So you're her ride.
Yeah.
What precious time that must be.
Well, used to be. Now she has a phone. So yeah, but it is, super rewarding. Great, wonderful little school. It's, so I have a daily commute on the freeway.
Okay. How old is your granddaughter?
She is in fourth grade right now.
Fourth grade. Oh, I love that age.
School goes to fifth grade and then she'll be mainstream, whatever mainstream means to you.
Okay. Yeah. To be determined. How wonderful though, that you have that time with her. So the school year is your commitment. That's your top commitment, is to be her ride. That's
absolutely
great.
Absolutely rock solid and can't be changed.
What a gift to her to have that time with you.
It's very special. The kids. So my grandkids are in the house, my house every day.
It's great.
Yeah. So it works out well, but it causes me to leave when I leave.
Sure, sure.
So walking in August is certainly not ideal.
It's going to be a little warm.
Yeah, I was watching the weather last year.
Yeah, yeah, it's quite warm.
Yeah, 113 degrees, but you know.
But not every day.
Yeah, I know. And it's a dry heat, so it only feels like 100.
Yeah, and not 24/7. I mean, it does drop down below 100 at night, so you'll be fine.
There you go.
Oh, the weather. Well, Roger, I so appreciate hearing your story and that you've been willing to come and share it. I just really appreciate it. I think it's a unique story, but it has threads of it that so many people can relate to. The story of loss, the story of adventure, the story of family supporting you, the story of discovery. So yeah, thanks for that. Do you have any questions that I can answer for you?
I do.
All right, let's have them.
But only a few. Okay. A couple of them have been snapped up by others the last few weeks.
The nerve of them.
It's like, oh, you stole my question. I thought that question. Let's see. Nancy, questions.
Okay.
We'll do the easy ones first. The section from Orison to Espanola, 24 kilometers. I'm concerned that may be too much.
So you're referring to the stage from Orison until you get over the mountain into Spain? And the first stop is Roncesvalles. Is that the one you're referring to?
No. Espanol. Is it Espanol?
Espinal.
Okay.
Espinal is, I want to say, another 6 kilometers from, I'd have to check for sure, but I think it's about 6 kilometers from Roncesvalles. So you're looking at about a 25 kilometer day.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that too much?
That depends on you.
I'm afraid you're going to tell me that.
Yeah. You know, it's my standard answer. It depends.
Yeah. I'm a little concerned about that. I may have to do something about that schedule.
May I ask your reason for going to Espinal?
Because it's not Roncesvalles.
It's
not on the stage.
Okay.
And I'm off stage quickly.
Okay.
Plus, I really do want to search out the smallest towns and and see those. That's of interest to me.
Gotcha. So I'm going to ask a follow-up question. When you say it's not Roncesvalles, what image do you have of Roncesvalles that has you not want to stay there?
Extremely busy.
Okay.
And I think the first few days, I think I need some space.
Okay, gotcha. So I'll say a couple things about that. The first thing is that the middle of June, curiously, at the beginning of the Camino Francés from Saint-Jean-Pied-du-Port, begins to slow down. And it's because people are starting in the better weather seasons, I would say. So people are starting in April and May, and then they start in late August and early September. And those are the busiest times. So by the time we get to June, and especially the middle of June, there are fewer pilgrims than you might expect at the start of the trail. So much so that by the time they get to July, some of the albergues don't have any pilgrims. And it's just quiet. You could still get, I bet money that you could get a bed in Orsan in late June and July still.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah, okay. Because it's just not their busy time. So the picture that you have of Roncesvalles being super busy, it may not be as busy as you are expecting.
Okay.
So the other thing about that is they have a very large albergue there. And I haven't asked, are you staying in albergues?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. I'm staying in everything.
Everything. Okay. So this one has just under 250 beds in it. And it can be very busy and feel very chaotic. But it's kind of a fun experience to be in Roncesvalles with the people you just went over the mountain with, who have just arrived and are feeling that sense of accomplishment. Especially if you had, let's just say, I'm not wishing this for you, but what if you have thunderstorms going over the mountain and you just hiked in thunderstorms and people are like, did you just see what we did? And everybody's buying drinks and, you know, celebrating and, oh my gosh, or they're celebrating how beautiful the weather was, how lucky they were, and the start of the journey. In Espinal, you then have people who are taking very short stages and have hopped from Saint-Jean to Orsan to Roncesvalles to Espinal, or they're doing very long stages. Not bad at all. Espinal, though, is more of a pass-through town, so it will give you the small village feel if that's what you want. Not many services there, but there is a wonderful bar that opened up last year, I want to say, and they have a beautiful hotel. And if you're in the albergues, it might not be your stop, but you literally walk, the trail walks into the door as it's about to make a turn. So you cannot miss this bar. I believe it's called Casa Roncesvalles, owned by the previous owners of La Posada in Roncesvalles. And so they have just changed villages and have a new beautiful place. So
I'm going to just go ahead and cancel my reservation and just wait, just get as far as I go.
You could do that. You could for sure. And the other thing too, is if you're coming from Orsan, you're 2 to 3 hours ahead of the people who are starting in Saint-Jean. So the risk of not getting a bed in Roncesvalles is very slim. And same with Bergetti and Espinal.
I will definitely just go ahead and cancel and see how far I get, see what happens.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. And because you might get to Roncesvalles and want to stay there. You just never know.
And that'll help me not, once I get past Pamplona, that'll help me not make reservations.
Yeah. And, you know, I like the idea of staying off stage. I really do like that idea. And in case people don't know exactly what that means, the guidebooks lay out stages. And a lot of people think, oh, we have to stay at the end of that stage because that's where all the albergues are. But there are albergues at all the interim stops as well, and hotels and guest houses and hostales.
And I intend to do primarily albergues, but every once in a while, I probably will give myself a good night's sleep and a good shower.
Very good. You may even come across a bathtub or something to soak your tired feet in. Yeah.
Simple question. Many of the pictures show a shell, Camino shell above a water source. Does that mean it's good to drink? Or does that mean it's...
It doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that. What you would be looking for is the word potable, which is spelled like potable. Very convenient. And if there's no sign, you can pretty much assume that the water is fine. The other sign you might see is something that means sanitation not guaranteed. And so sanitario no guarantee. I don't know the exact words in Spanish and French. So if you see a sign, honor it. If there's no sign, it's a good source, especially when you're on the Camino, because most of these water sources are in the local square or in the local park, in the middle of the village or the town. And so those are reliable water sources.
Okay, great. On my trip, as I start, I've booked 2 days in St. John.
Right.
And 1 day in Papaloma, because I've landed in Madrid, trained to Papaloma, and then, is that the right way? 1 day in Papaloma and 2 days in St. John? Or should I do 2 days in Papaloma?
Yeah, you know, the question of the right way, what I would ask you is what experience do you want? Do you have the time to take an extra day? And is there anything about Pamplona that's calling you as interesting? My personal preference is to stay forever in Pamplona. I just love that city. Pamplona has a lot to offer in terms of services, for one. So you've been traveling. You're now in Spain. You've come over the Pyrenees. Now is the time where we catch our breath and go, wait a minute. I think I need this. I need to find this. I need to replace this. I forgot to bring this. I need to go to the post office. I have too much stuff. Let me send it to Santiago. Oh, I'd like to get a SIM card for my smartphone. Let's see. I need to do a load of laundry. And I know there are three laundromats in the center of Pamplona. Well, now you know there are three laundromats in the center of Pamplona. And by the way, it's a vibrant town. And at 5 o'clock in the evening, everybody's out in the plazas enjoying the city. At 7 o'clock, half of them move to the Pinchos bars and start enjoying something to drink in a Pincho or two or three. And it's just vibrant and beautiful. So okay. I would stay in Pamplona an extra day. The downside is if you're in with a group of people who you want to be with and want to be walking with, and they don't stop in Pamplona, they will then become a stage ahead of you. So it's a trade-off.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
The last question I have, I'm hard of hearing. You and I discussed that.
Yeah.
My father was. And I'm a little concerned. I'm doing poles. I finally got the hang of poles well enough so I don't look ridiculous. I learned how to use them, leveraging up the hill. And also, you know, I've got a couple of concerns though as I walk, and that is dogs. Early on, I was concerned, do I put poles or not? I've always used a single staff. And they started talking about using the poles again with dogs. And I'm like, okay, I'm using poles. And the other piece is bikes.
Yeah.
Hard of hearing, they come up on you and say, they quietly say, on your left.
They don't.
And yeah, even if they do, I'm not going to hear it.
Yeah.
Because that was the one thing that drew me to your podcast and you is I can hear you.
Oh, good.
Hear you very distinctly. And bonus, you're really nice.
Thank you.
But I'm really, and if people say, well, you put a something on your backpack that says you're hard of hearing. I'm like, well, what is that? Because you need something universal so they can quickly identify it. Otherwise, they'll buy you and don't know what it is you're trying to say
or
communicate.
Yes.
Is there such a thing?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know if there is a universal sign for hard of hearing. I think there should be. And the reality of it is that a cyclist moving at the pace of a cyclist isn't going to catch it unless it's really big and obvious and universally known. And so it is a hazard. It's a hazard for people who can hear, because the cyclists do not say on your left, unless you're very lucky. Some of them will call out, but many of them, they are on you before you know they're there. So the best that we can do as walkers is to make sure that we are hugging the side of the trail. If the trail is wide enough that we are on the right side of the trail. In Spain, pedestrians are expected to walk on the left side of the road against traffic. And that will really help you, because then you don't have to worry so much about hearing the traffic. You can visually look for it and make sure that you know what's coming. But yeah, it's a challenge for walkers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Just wasn't sure about the if there's some sort of symbol, because they, oh yeah, you should put a patch on, you should,
yeah,
like, well, how's that work?
Yeah. And that's the thing, is it would work for people at the pace of walking, but it might not work for anybody else if they're moving faster. Now, the question of dogs, I'm not a fan of dogs running around me. I'm scared they're going to run at or into me. The trekking poles are not so much to be defensive or to attack the dogs or to hit them or to use against them, but more to plant them in the ground and stand behind them, so that they can't get to you through the poles. A staff would work as well if someone is thinking about using just one pole or one stick. And it's just a heightened level of awareness to be ready to kind of dance around to keep the dog on the other side of the poles or the staff. Yeah. In my experience, I cannot think of a single time when a dog was running at me on the Camino in all my years.
No.
Yeah, I just can't. What's more common is you pass a dog that's inside of a fence or a yard who barks at you because that's their job. Person passing by, I bark.
That's perfectly.
I did run across one dog on the Valcarlos route last year that I didn't see. I was reading a sign and it started barking at me. It was unleashed, untethered right there. And I was like, please be nice. Please be nice. And it just wanted to bark. And then I just walked away and it left me alone. So I don't think it's as common as our fears make it out to be and our concerns make it out to be.
Yeah.
Well, and I say it that way because there are instances where people are bitten by dogs and a dog bite can be quite severe. Yeah. So it is in our best interest as walkers to be aware and vigilant.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those things. It is a fear. Sure. As a kid, I was bitten, so I have a scar.
Yeah. And if you can't hear the dog barking, that's their normal method of alerting you that they're onto you.
Barking is one thing. That's, you know, that's what they do. That's their, that's why
that's their job. That's what they do. Yeah. It's like we breathe, they bark.
You know, territorial, protecting the turf.
Yeah.
And saving you from the UPS guy.
Well, someone's got to. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the extent of my questions. Many of the questions I had written down and I crossed it off. It's like, David took my question.
David. Yeah. Darn it. Yeah. No, he shared some great information. Great information back in season two.
Including the question, he took the question, I believe it was David, not to throw him under the bus, but he seemed really great.
He is. Yeah.
The sites, the most popular sites to see, the thing, don't miss sorts of activities. That is one of my concerns, is, you know, there's something like two blocks off or three blocks off. Like there's a mural in one of the villages that is two blocks away from the trail. So majority of people never see it.
Yeah.
So you get in the albergue that night and everybody's talking about the wonderful thing.
And that's the thing, is we get so onto the path and we get into the flow of that river that we don't realize that at any point we can step off the trail and look around in any village, in any town. The biggest challenge is that it adds extra kilometers and a walking pilgrim is like, no, 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 no. I'm going 22.4 today. I am not going to go 24.8. I'm not doing it. So we think I'm only going to take the steps that I have to, but there is gold in those villages if we take the time to look around. So it is definitely worth it when you take a break, look around, take a side street, definitely.
Yeah, and because of the way the scheduling fell, I have the time.
You have the time. Yeah. You'll be reporting back to us with all the interesting things you find.
Yeah. So five or six extra days. And so, yeah. So León,
Burgos, Logroño, Astorga.
Stop in old village for an extra day and there's not much to do.
Very good. You'll find some good stuff. Roger, any final thoughts or anything you'd like to share with our listeners?
No, I will say, you know, many of your podcast people have talked about, you know, when the journey begins, and it begins at the front door. And for me, that's absolutely true. It began at the front door.
Yeah.
The preparation was a huge bonus and distraction for me. It allowed me to focus on things other than the loss of my wife. It gave us discussion points, endless amounts of discussion, something to engage people on, because everybody's kind of fascinated.
Yes, the whole thing.
And then some people have never heard of it, and some people, you know, I went into a store on Monday to buy some towels, my tea towels, because I'm staging my house for sale.
Oh.
And with the clerks, the question evolved into what are you doing next? And I said, well, I'm lucky. And she was a member of American Pilgrims.
Right there. See, we need to wear something, not because we're hard of hearing, but because we're pilgrims. That's why people wear those things. They wear shirts and pins with the scallop shell so we can identify ourselves and each other. Yeah, they're everywhere. Pilgrims are out there.
Yeah.
That's great, Roger.
A couple of patches on my back. I had them sewn on, so they will stay put.
Excellent. Yeah. We'll be looking for you.
And the other's an American Pilgrim with an arrow, yellow arrow. So. Great. Yeah, so it's all part of the fun, and yeah, it's been a huge benefit. But it did begin actually inside my house. It began there, and it's really been a benefit. It's really helped the family pull together as they figure out their piece of the trip.
And I love that they're involved.
Yeah, so we're all going, you know.
Great. Roger, thank you so much for sharing your story and for spending the time with me. It's really a pleasure.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Nancy. Appreciate the opportunity and look forward to it. I'm just sorry I miss you on the trail.
I know. I feel that way too. People going in March and April and June, July. Come on. Everybody go in May with me. Okay. I won't whine too much. Yeah. No, I would love to have a big reunion party of all my listeners on the trail. That would be so fun.
Yeah, that would be great.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And I will just look forward to hearing how it goes.
Take care. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks. Bye.